And on this dark and stormy Monday morning, I'm really glad to have a companion here at WMUK to talk about a life-affirming program and a remembrance program for Thursday evening at 8 p.m., the Kalamazoo Bach Festival, in cooperation with the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra. We'll present on your screens a performance of the Requiem by Gabriel Fauré. The conductor and preparer and so much more is Chris Ludva, who leads the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus at Kalamazoo College. Chris, great to talk to you again, and especially nice to have you here.
Oh, it's always great to be in the studio.
In person.
Absolutely.
Yes, as we sample our Earl Grey this morning. take me back to the last project that you did that, to me, sounds along these same lines, where you brought together both orchestral and voices and soloists and text for an online presentation of Arise Awake, a cantata adaptation of Johann Sebastian Bach.
So that was, yeah, that was the last time I was in with you. And this is very similar in some ways. You know, that was a work that I had done as part of my sabbatical at Kay and was really about social justice and trying to recognize the ways in which the belief systems and the words and the things that we have, you know, spooling around in our heads all the time manifest themselves in the world around us. And then we were looking at wanting to do something this spring. We knew that at this point we could open up to the point where we could have the choir back together again, masked and distanced, to record something. And so we thought, what should we do? And we were looking for a piece that was comforting, that was well known, that we could put together on relatively few rehearsals, and that was relatively short, only at about 30 minutes or so, and which we thought people would really would resonate with. And so the Fauré Requiem was a really obvious choice. Mm-hmm. And many a singer has sung it, many a churchgoer has listened to it, and it's supremely comforting and just has this beautiful sense of solace that sort of sweeps over you when you listen to it. So that felt like we were on the right track with that piece. And then we thought, okay, we don't want this to just be about memorializing those who have passed or struggled due to COVID, but in light of the racial unrest over the last year, I suppose on some level in celebration of Juneteenth and the new legislation around that, we just felt really compelled to also say that we wanted this to be in honor of or in a memory of those people that had passed due to racial violence as well, as we continue to try to wrestle with that and find a new way forward.
Will that be implied or specific
in yes, the well, some of it'll be implied.
but I think you're playing with some texts in between.
Yes.
In between movements.
Right. So the Fauré itself will be exactly what people know. Mm-hmm. All sung in Latin. We'll have subtitles so people will know what we're singing about. But yes, interspersed, much like we did in Awake Arise, interspersed between each movement are these spoken word poems from various folks from Kalamazoo. We really wanted to highlight, feature voices from Kalamazoo, some from Kalamazoo College, some from our board, Jeremy Koch from Farmers Alley. So we had a really nice mix of people to come together and to recite poems that are both just in general about the grief process, but then also specifically from Black voices that often are unheard when it comes to poems that many of us grew up with. And I think now with Amanda Gorman and other poets, Maya Angelou, whatnot, that are coming online and or receiving more airtime, mm-hmm. we're seeing that dialogue and that focus, that emphasis switch to be more inclusive. And we just felt like, you know, we really wanted to do this project in this way, to have these elements that are specifically targeted at racial violence and the Black experience in America, so that all of us might be more aware of that and able to be more sensitive to it.
I have always strongly felt, just based on my non-conservatory upbringing, just basically accessing this music, classical music, through radio most of my life, even as a child, that this music is everybody's. It's being broadcast. And I see what your work lately as specifically inviting people of color into this and saying, take ownership, this is yours?
Yes, I think you know, so often we perceive of these things as being, you know, the property of one group or another group, and that's just conditioned into us as we have grown up. But yeah, we just feel like I feel very strongly, and Bach Festival, I think, as an organization, our board, our singers feel very strongly that it is high time to make sure that we open up what we're doing in the classical world, and sometimes to do that by inviting other voices, other composers, to be paired with traditional classical fare in a way that I think maybe 10 years ago somebody might have looked down their nose at, but I find increasingly that people are more intrigued by this idea of good music is good music, and why do we have to do it all in one genre or another? We can do it all.
You have introduced some more innovative kinds of programs and invited groups that haven't shared the stage with the Kalamazoo Bach Festival before in the last few years since you arrived and became the director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival chorus. But I also do like the echo of history that presenting a requiem represents with the Kalamazoo Bach Festival. There will have been, if you go through all the programs, you will have seen this requiem performed probably in the 80s, the 70s, the 60s, the 50s, all maybe even back to the 40s. So it's good to remember the through line, mm-hmm. and also bringing this innovation into the presentation. Of course, another innovation is that it is online. Let's remind listeners again that they can watch Thursday at 8 p.m. Through the Kalamazoo Bach Festival website. KalamazooBachFestival.org is where you will find on the front page a blue purchase tickets link. And when you do click on that link, you will see a whole range of options for watching, from a simple COVID relief link for one viewer. They have party options, couple options, and everything in between. So take a look at that.
Yeah, I think going back to that idea of the through line, I'm always amazed, and I don't know if you feel this way, every time you perform something that has been around for centuries, literally in many cases, how connective that feels and how timeless it feels to do this music. And you know, you mentioned it was probably done in each of these generations. Bach Festival is coming up on its 75th anniversary. KSO is in the midst of celebrating its 100th, and all of this music has been around for even longer than that. And it's always humbling to stand in front of the choir, in front of the orchestra, and to hear them sing this music that for so many has provided comfort for so long in so many different contexts.
We're really lucky here this morning because, Chris, you brought along sound that is mixed down in its final form that will be heard on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And no, I'm not going to preview the entire thing. People, you do need to fully experience it with sight and sound on Thursday night, plus the specially selected poetry and recitations that are also included. But we can sure get the flavor.
Yeah, I think let's play a little of that first movement. It's so indicative of the mood of the piece.
How did you conduct this?
One I conducted in 8. Oh, no, wait. do you mean like with what, like, personnel?
Yeah.
This was 5 different recording sessions. The kind of cool thing, you can be part of history if you tune in on Thursday night, is this is not going to be something that will be on YouTube because it is a live broadcast. And through the stipulations of the musicians' union and whatnot, it's something that's a one and done. So what's really neat is that the musicians, both singer and instrumentalist, have never heard this piece. None of us have until Thursday night when it premieres, at least in its entirety. Now, your listeners today will, of course, get some lovely preview of it for the first time. But yes, we did the orchestra session first alone, and then we did soloists, and then we did 2, 3, 4 different sessions with the choir and the choir was never together. It was the sopranos and altos one session, the tenor bass was another session. We did one rehearsal, all of us together, but because of the need to distance and to be safe in the space, we were had to record it in separate groups. So this is a really interesting thing to hear it come together finally.
Never have has the two-word phrase, watch me, been more important.
Yes. Yes. There are certain things that I definitely learned about doing this process having to do with lining things up and click tracks, because the foray has a lot of really interesting moments where the choir drops out and it's the orchestra, or the orchestra drops out and the choir, or it's just the organ. And all of those places, you know, counting when you're conducting is one thing. But then when you go back to piece it all together and you go, oh, wait, how long was that? And you don't have anything to watch yourself conduct it, so you don't know when to cue them in. It was a real struggle, and I just kept thinking to myself, oh, I can't wait to all be back together again.
Yeah. The simplicity of in-person music making, what a joy. And it is heading that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think absolutely. We just saw the KSO on Saturday night out at the Gilmore Carr Museum, and it was really cathartic to be there.
Yes. And this is the members of the Kalamazoo Symphony we will hear joining the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus. Let's listen to the opening movement sung in Latin, mm-hmm. Kyrie Eleison, which is the traditional opening for any requiem. Here it is. That is the opening movement, Kyrie Eleison, to the Fore Requiem. If you tuned in during the music, we're listening to a very special performance, which came together over many hours, many sessions, and all directed by my guest, Dr. Chris Ludva, who leads the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, and in this case, members of the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra in recording that you can watch and hear Thursday night starting at 8 p.m. Ticket information is at kalamazoobachfestival.org. Chris, I know this music we just heard represents a whole lot of behind-the-scenes work, but did you always keep in mind, like, the final product, like what you know listeners will actually see and hear? Like, what are you trying to...
Yeah, this was interesting. You know, we worked with Overneath on the video. And so when we got into recording, we knew that with the KSO, we started with the KSO. So we had our players from there and Eric Strand on the organ. And that part, we went ahead and recorded all that so the singers could get used to singing with the actual instrument. It was, I like to say that we recorded the first ever foray karaoke track so that anybody that wanted to go to a bar and sing Foray Requiem karaoke could do it. In fact, it would be really fun.
You should release that. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. A lot of demand there.
Put it in my car.
Yes, it'd be like Dancing Queen followed by the Foray Requiem. anyway, so we started out with them, but when we were recording the KSO, we were doing both the audio and the video. And so while we were doing that process, it was like you always had to be aware that you weren't just recording the audio and then laying the video on later. So whatever you were doing, either as a conductor, as a musician, whatever it might be, you were essentially in performance at that point. So you're recording it like you would be in the studio, but you're also, this is what the audience is going to see. And so there were a couple times that I was really grateful for the musicians there, where we would start a movement, and we generally did a movement, talked through a few things, and then did another movement, or did that movement over again, and then moved to the next movement. And what we would often do before the second movement is, you know, the musicians are used to having singers with them in a live setting. They play off of it. There's energy there for them in understanding these words and what they mean, and, you know, holy, 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 and Lord have mercy. But without that, I was really worried that the musicians would not have the same experience with it or play with the same emotion. And so each time before we would record it, I would say, this is the meaning of this text. And I would tell them what it was. And then I would tell some sort of a little story or narrative about somebody that had suffered, either from COVID or racialized violence, so that they were drawing on that same kind of spirit as they would be if they were hearing it from the choir during the performance. And then when we got the chorus together, it was the same kind of thing. Every time we actually, in that case, we did record the audio first, and then we went back and recorded the audio and the video a second time. But same kind of deal. You had to think through, okay, what is the audience going to be seeing in this moment? And we're masked. So because we were really, at that point, nothing had been opened up yet. This was back in late May, early June. And we were still abiding by all the rules in terms of being 6 feet apart. We still don't know at this point, have not heard definitive evidence yet as to what singing is in terms of its safety and regarding COVID. So we were 6 feet apart. We had masks on. And yet I was like, okay, I need to see more emotion on this, because the audience is going to want to see that you're either celebrating in this moment or you're grieving. And so we had to add little things to that in the video that you'll see that suggests that in a way that when you can't see somebody's mouth, you still see what's happening. So for instance, on the offertory, different voice parts and different orchestral instruments enter at different time on that particular movement. And so I said, okay, let's have it with everybody's heads down as if they're praying until your part comes in. And then a few bars before your part, then raise your head up as if you're... And then when we were doing the video only and going back and doing edits, I would say, okay, I want you to look over this way at the window as if you're in church, and I want you to look over here at the soloist, and I want, so there were all these different ways to sort of stage people that we were trying to make it look authentic. It ended up being more like a music video in that sense than it was, you know, a live performance. But when it was all cut together, then the hope is that you will see and feel and hear the emotion both in the playing and the singing that really allows this piece to be so evocative.
My guest is Chris Ludva, conductor and film director of the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus and the Kalamazoo Symphony Orchestra in this special performance, which will be offered once in live at 8 o'clock Thursday night. There is only this opportunity to see it, and you have to be there or be square. Kalamazoo Bach Festival, or Kalamazoo Bach Fest, I think works, .org is where you will find full details on tickets. They're offering quite a range of prices from $5 to up to nearly 99. So
a lot of entry points. That's a really conscious choice that our board and our executive director, Corey Summers, strived for when we got into COVID. And it can maybe something that we hang on to even post pandemic, I think, and this, that we'd never want the price of classical music to be a barrier to somebody. And whether that is, we also find that people generally, it's more fun to go to music together, right? And so this idea of the party pack, which seems a little odd for a requiem, but you know, a group kind of thing is a lot more enjoyable, and everybody wins, everybody saves, and it becomes kind of a thing.
Well, I'd like to hear about the soloists that appear in this piece. I can't remember. I know there's a big soprano or boy soprano solo in the Pia Jesu, and I know there's a male voice included. Is it just the two?
Just the two, yep. Okay. One of them is Jessica Coe, who has been one of our soprano section leaders for quite a while. And she will do the boy soprano part. Jessica has an exquisitely sweet voice with really wonderful warm depth and tones lower in the voice. But her upper voice is just so, it's just perfect for this moment. There is a pure sort of holy kind of centeredness to it that is just perfect for the Pia Jesu. And we have her, going back to the idea of staging, she is staged in Stetson Chapel. If anybody's ever seen Stetson Chapel or not seen it, and this almost becomes like an example of the beautiful renovation that was just done too, because you have all these great shots of the inside that were redone. Jessica is in front of those rounded windows at the far end, and it is as if she is praying, and then she stands up and she turns around and faces the audience. So really different camera angles with that to make it more interesting. And then the other soloist, who I had not worked with before but I adored, was Gerald Case Blanchard, who directs the Kalamazoo – I'm going to hopefully get this right.
It's the Kellogg Community
Choir
Program.
Yes.
I've had a chance to talk to him twice this year. He is also, as a director, been putting together – one by one, the voices of his choir into full video performances. So he can definitely identify with what you
were
doing.
Pretty special, yeah. And it's I'd never heard him, I mean, other than online. He's putting together a program in Pennsylvania that he's doing of spirituals, and he had recorded one of them. And he and I, it's one of these relationships we've been going back and forth and trying to find the right time to get him to do something with Bach Festival for the last 4 years. And the timing was just right, and he had just put out this spiritual on YouTube, kind of as a predecessor to what he would do in this concert in Pennsylvania, and he was doing some spiritual, I don't remember what it was, and I was just like, wow, what a beautiful, bright, ringing voice, gorgeous. And so I called him up, and I said, how about now? Is now the time? And he said, yes, absolutely, it's perfect. So he came out to Stetson, and we recorded two tracks. He's on the second movement and the sixth movement, the Libera Me. And oh, what a treat to hear him sing. It is just gorgeous.
He is just a community treasure in Battle Creek. He mm-hmm. makes it possible for anyone to come and sing at the college there. And we'll take and train just about anyone at any age. I love his mission, and I would love to hear his voice. I've never heard him sing. So which movement shall we choose?
Probably here? Let's go with movement six, the Libera Me, which is essentially the it's kind of the, if there were a fire and brimstone movement in Fauré, this would be it. Now, I'll give a quick background. In the traditional Requiem, you would have a Dies Irae movement, much as you do in Mozart or Verdi earlier in the piece.
Dies Irae is Day of Judgment.
Day of Judgment,
it's
Day
fiery,
of Wrath,
yeah.
You know, all bad stuff. And Fauré chooses to put this later in the piece, and it's Libera Me, Domine, free me, Lord, from death eternal. So it starts out very much sort of pleading. When heaven and earth shake, you will come in judgment. So there's still this little bit of judgment, but then the choir comes in with this very soft, in trembling and fear, we wait for you as the discussion or the decision is made for us in terms of what will happen. And then the choir really launches into the actual Dies Ile, Day of Judgment. But then he returns at the end as if to say that even in this sense of horror and judgment and all of us being accountable for our actions, that there is still some sort of resolution at the end. And I think that, again, in light of what we're trying to accomplish with this Requiem, shows it really was relevant. It's not what Fauré set out to do, of course. But if you think about the this movement, it starts out with the baritone soloist, then we have the choir, then we have this huge Dies Irae, and then he comes back and says, free me from this. I look at it and I think about sort of the original sin in America, somebody called it, was slavery. And so I look at it as him being the voice of the slave, first saying, free me. And then the chorus saying, in trembling and in fear, it's almost as if we look at what we have done and what we have not done. and we sort of, and then are reminded of that judgment will come upon each of us for the way that we've lived and what we have handed down to the next generation. And then, as if to remind us one more time at the end, he comes back and says, "Free me, free me." And we have this moment to echo him, as if looking inward and going, okay, now is our moment. Now is our new civil rights movement, our chance to do the right thing and to make sure that everybody has the same opportunity.
Let me reintroduce my guest. It's Dr. Chris Ludva, who leads the Kalamazoo Bach Festival Chorus, is a professor of music at Kalamazoo College, and is inspired by rethinking these old texts, these classic pieces. On Thursday night, you will hear the music, see the performers, and included are recitations and poetry between movements that add this fresh new context. We'll take a break now and hear the Liberame movement from the Fore Requiem.
Liberame, Domine, de morte tena. In die illa tremenda, in die
Gerald Case Blanchard was the soloist in that special selection that we are previewing with conductor Chris Ludva. If you just tuned in, the piece is the Fore Requiem. And beyond the music, you will see a video of all the performers making this piece come to life on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. And full details can be found at KalamazooBachFestival.org. I just love how we talked about that specific movement. I mean, that's why I would keep you here for a couple hours, Chris, because we could go through each movement, but I think we might hear one more. I don't want to overshare.
We want people to actually, you know, see what they're going to see. I think there's something really cool that happens also in the way that we film this that I don't want to overshare either and give away too much, but I will just say that in the way that we filmed it, and I mentioned, you know, bringing our heads up at various times, there are some really cool metaphorical things that happen as in the way that we filmed this in light of the way that we entered the pandemic and the way that we are coming out of it. And there is that's as much as I'll say, other than, you know, my wife and I talk a lot about how stressful it's been coming out of, if we are coming out of it, the yeah. pandemic, yeah. as things go back to quote unquote normal. And, you know, when we were first coming into it, I said, you know, this is our first time in a pandemic. So we need to give all of ourselves grace in terms of the way that we deal with this. But it's also our first time starting to come out of one. And I think we can't underestimate the stressfulness of that, having lived in one way for over a year, and what it's like to come back into society. And my hope is with this piece then that part of that is allowing ourselves to grieve what happened over the last year, not just the tremendous number of deaths and whatnot, but maybe the transformation that has happened in each one of us. Maybe we've become more appreciative of home. Maybe we've become more appreciative of having quiet space. I know people talk about, I don't always need to be around people now. And so I think there's, for us, what we were really trying to do with these different voices in between the movements is to say that we all grieve in different ways. And it's okay that there are moments of grief that are full of anger, and there are moments that are full of regret, and there are moments that are full of hope. You know, the third movement, the Sanctus, is this gorgeous holy, holy, holy movement. And it sounds like the church bells. It sounds like the ringing that you would hear in a church service. And that is contrasted with the seventh movement, which is the In Paradisum, where it literally, if somebody could have musically depicted heaven, then Gabriel Fauré did that with this movement. It is just, I mean, it has harp and organ together, and it just feels like you're surrounded by these angels. But all of those movements and the way that we weave through this, both with the spoken word and the music, I think are indicative of the process that we've gone through, the ups, the downs, the ups and downs that are still to come as we come out of this and realize that we live in a privileged place where many of us are feeling safer, but other places in the world still don't have access to what we have access to. And so trying to use this to center our thoughts, I guess, and to be at peace with what is, but also to understand that we have a role in making sure that all have a sense of comfort and a sense of solace and a sense of peace in their lives in the same way that we do. And then that's not, for me, that shouldn't be a privilege. That should be part of just being human. And hopefully, you know, this kind of work, musically speaking, can help people to find that center and find that chance to pray or meditate or go inward or just be grateful for what they have in hopes of being more aware of where we can be more active to help others.
Yeah.
There's a lot there. Sorry.
Well, as things... I have so many conflicting impulses, to be honest, Chris, because there is like maybe a pretty juvenile part of myself that is running toward openness and no more thinking about COVID and throwing my mask away and just pretending it didn't happen. And my more mature self is saying, you need to acknowledge this in order to help process it and learn from it. Learn something, Kara. And ceremony or ritual is one of the things humans for millennia have used to help mark these things and make a memory that says, yes, I acknowledged that this took
place. Well said. Yes. I think I was listening to something on Being with Krista Tippett, a program that I enjoy, and she was interviewing someone at Chautauqua, New York, and mentioned that when we move from grief to mourning, then it becomes more of an active participation. And so hopefully through this work, then we move into mourning and we find in mourning that meaning, that those messages for us as to what, even though this last year felt incredibly long, that when you compare it with, you know, the time period for the last 200 or 300 years, for those people that are that don't have the same opportunities, it's even longer for them. Or when you, a year, even when you compare it to the length of one of the world wars, is still relatively small. We have sacrificed so much in a year, and yet it is still just a microcosm of what others have sacrificed for much, much longer. And so I think moving from grief into mourning, into meaning, can hopefully help us each to be a little bit more informed as we go forward.
Chris, I'm going to predict that there's a 100% chance that members of your choir and members of the KSO have lost people to COVID in the last year.
I guarantee it. And I know that our audience is the same. And this is our opportunity to grieve those folks.
One in particular that I feel I must mention, who we did not need to lose this soon, was Tom Kasdorf, whose entire life was making music through voice.
Mm-hmm.
who, you know, you can't help but think of these people who created a space for others to sing for so long.
Yeah, literally created the foundations upon which we continue to do this work here. So, yeah, it's on us then to make sure that we keep the music going and that we use the music to be more aware of ourselves and our actions.
It is time now for us to leave our listeners with one more selection from this 7-movement Requiem by Gabriel Fauré. I'm guessing the broadcast at 8 o'clock on Thursday night, which you can see online, is going to last about a little over an hour, perhaps?
Not even an hour, I think a little closer to 50 minutes. The Fauré itself is 30. There's a little bit of talking in advance. I talk about framing the work and then the spoken word element. So, yeah, under an hour. Just a nice way to sit with this and to be still for a minute.
You mentioned some of the speakers, and maybe you could bring that back again at the end of this time.
Yeah, I think, let's see, we had several college students, Inika Uag from Kalamazoo College that did it, Koyan Sidibe, also a student at K, Dr. Romeo Phillips, former professor at K, emeritus now, been on the Bach Festival board. Many people will know Romeo from his work around town, Jeremy Koch from Farmer's Alley. So just a really great group of people that I think all felt compelled to add their voice to this.
Good to know. And what movement should we pick, Chris?
I'm gonna let that be your choice. You have two choice. I would say either movement 3 if you want to leave on a more upbeat note, or if you want movement 5 for the most exquisite use of 12 notes in the beginning of a piece.
I'm going to go with Holy, Holy, Holy.
Movement 3 it is. For the win.
Thank you so much. And listeners, once again, you'll find tickets available at kalamazoobachfestival.org. And I look forward to the next time we have a chance to talk, Chris.
Thank you. Me too.